Assumptions by Sunhawk. The first part in the Ion Arc. Read by Rhea314. I allow myself only 15 minutes in the shower. It's a steadfast rule, self-imposed from my days with the sweepers. 15 minutes and only lukewarm water. When you walk around with hair down to your ass, people tend to resent every second you spend in the shower. It gets in their head that it must take you forever to wash that much hair, and suddenly every minute you spend in the bathroom seems to multiply in their minds. And yeah, it means I have to rush like hell. It's just one of those stereotypical things I've had to deal with for years. I guess that's why it gets under my skin so easily. Nothing drives me insane faster than being able to predict stupidity. Maybe that's why I don't look back with any fondness on the first time the five of us shared a safe house together. I got hit with half a dozen of those damned hackneyed accusations within days. I'm an orphan. I grew up on the streets, and for some strange reason, people assume, because of that fact, I will eat everything that isn't nailed down. Nothing could be further from the truth. I'm used to hunger in a way you can only get from living hand to mouth. Sure, I get hungry just like anyone else, but my definition of hunger and most people's are two entirely different things. Food is nothing more than sustenance. My body needs it. I don't much care after that. And I'm not particularly picky about what I eat. As a child, I learned how to catch, kill, skin, and cook rat. You want to debate on the difference between T-bone and porterhouse? I couldn't care less. My two biggest fans in the house were pretty predictable as well, Hiro and Wufei. Wufei was the one who decided to become obsessed with my use of hot water, and Hiro settled for nagging me about my eating habits. Both of them were reacting to the simple fact that they didn't care for me personally. I knew that, and would have thought understanding them would have made it easier somehow, but it only made it worse. By the end of the second day, I was ready to explode. Another thing you should know about me, I have a touch of some sort of martyr complex. I'm well aware of it, but when I am in the throes of a pissing contest, it just doesn't fucking matter to me. I'm perfectly capable of cutting off my own nose despite my face. The morning of the third day, I woke up in full fuck you mode, sick to death of being treated like an outsider, of being accused of shit that just plain wasn't true. I wake up early, old street habit. You need to be on the move before the marks hit the street if you expect to get any breakfast. Whether begging or stealing, the best time was in the early morning, when people were heading off to work before their day had soured, while they were still feeling good. So on the morning of the third day, I rose early, grabbed a towel from the bathroom, and walked down to the creek, where I performed Fuck You Act Number 1. I stripped and waded into the icy water, bathed thoroughly, and washed my hair with handfuls of clean creek-bottom sand. I thought my balls were going to crawl up inside my body and never come back down, but when I was done, I was clean as I would have been with a nice hot shower. Fuck you, Wufei. Never touched your precious hot water supply. Then I went scavenging in the woods for breakfast. I found some walnuts and spent the next half hour sitting in the sun, letting my hair dry a little, while I cracked them open with the rock and picked the meat out. Fuck you, Hiro. Never touched your precious food supply. The other thing that people assume about me is that I'm lazy. Stems from my laid-back attitude, I suppose. Again, not based on any truth. You learn to do your share when you live in a gang, or the gang doesn't keep you long. So after I ate, I braided my still damp hair and went into the house to find some chores that needed doing. The previous night's dinner's dishes were stacked in the drainer, so I put them away. There was enough stuff in the laundry basket to constitute a couple of loads, so I started one. Now, one thing is true. I hate cold. And that, too, is a thing that stems from my youth. Being cold makes me remember those days of having to huddle together with other kids in whatever shelter we could scrounge. Freezing to death is, perhaps, not the worst way in the universe to go, but seeing someone do it leaves a lasting impression on a young mind. This house had a large fireplace, and we had a fire going most evenings, lying in front of it until I felt fully toasted like a marshmallow, what is one of the few luxuries I had allowed myself in this place with all the guys around. It didn't seem to annoy them. I think they enjoyed the comfort of fire as well, though they wouldn't admit it. But I made damn sure that nobody else ever had to chop or carry wood. It was late enough that I didn't think anyone else would still be in bed, so that's where I took myself next. Out to chop more wood and fill the firebox. As I worked, I became aware of the rest of the house stirring to life. Tro was in the kitchen, and on one of my trips in the house with an armload of wood, I noticed the smell of eggs frying. Tro is an okay guy, if quiet. I passed through the kitchen to put the wash into the dryer and started a second load, and he greeted me with a quiet, "Good morning." I grinned at him as I went through. "Morning, Tro." I glanced at the table and noticed that it wasn't yet set for breakfast. "Don't bother setting a place for me. I already ate." He frowned at me, slightly puzzled-looking, but I went on by without further comment. Laundry switched, I went back to the chopping block. I had to grin at myself ruefully. Should have chopped the damn wood before bathing. I was sort of negating the whole effort. Wood chopping was something I hadn't known how to do before this safe house, and I'm embarrassed to confess that I almost cut my own foot off the first time I tried it. It's not as easy as it looks. 3 days into my new skill, it still takes a certain amount of concentration on my part to make sure the axe is splitting the wood and not body parts, so I was a little irritated when Wufei came charging out the back door, bellowing at me in mid-swing. "Maxwell!" he yelled, and he said more, but it pretty much went by me as I almost lost control of the damn axe. "What?" I yelled back, when I had the blade stopped and was sure my knee was still intact. "There's no damn hot water, again," he stated, his hair down and dripping, what must have been cold water everywhere. "That goddamn hair of yours!" I cut him off. "I have not showered today," I gritted, and turned away to begin picking up the wood. "The washing machine is running. Turn it off." I could feel him staring at me for a bit, but I ignored him. When I turned around to take the wood in the house, he was gone. "Fuck you, Wufei." The firebox was full enough, so I decided to stop chopping wood while I was still intact and went to get the clothes of the dryer. The others were sitting around the breakfast table, and I got a smile from Katra and a glare from Hiro as I came into the room. "Good morning, duo." Katra smiled at me as I stopped to wash my hands before dealing with the clothes. "Morning, Kat." I grinned at him, and he blushed. He's the only one I feel free enough to address with any sort of nickname. I think he likes it, but for some reason it embarrasses him. I thought I might escape to the laundry room with no more than that, but the frown on Hiro's face was already deepening, and he stopped me before I could get by. "The supplies are limited. We can't afford for anyone to..." I turned away from the sink to face him. His glares are heat personified. "Mine are the soul of ice." He stopped in mid-sentence. "I didn't touch your carefully counted and inventoried supplies," I growled. He met my cold stare but didn't back down. "Troa said you already ate," he said accusingly. It rankled me, thinking about them talking behind my back like I was not part of their little group. "I took care of myself, and I didn't go near your precious supplies." We stared at each other for a little while longer, and when he didn't have anything else to say, I turned away and went to finish the laundry. "Fuck you, Hiro." I caught the dryer before it shut off and was able to hang Kat's dress shirts before they wrinkled. I resisted the urge to just leave Hiro and Wufei's clothes to lie in the dryer, but I managed to make myself fold the green and black tank tops with the same detachment as Tro and Kat's clothes. Anger was growling around in my gut, and I decided, without thinking about it, that I would not touch another bite of their goddamn food. I didn't care if I starved to death. Yep, spiting my own face all over the place. I drew the line at putting their clothes away and just stacked everything in the laundry basket and set it on the kitchen table. Let them come and get their own damn stuff. I checked and someone else had already done the breakfast dishes, so I went to find Katra. It was my turn to make the supply run. I heard them in the living room, and it was the low tone of their voices that made me hesitate instead of just going in. "Walnuts? Why in the hell would he go out in the woods scrounging for food when we have..." Wufei was saying. Akatra cut him off. Someone must have noticed the pile of smashed hulls. "Because of the way you two write him about every little thing. What is your problem? Duel carries more than his own weight." "He's unprofessional," I heard Hiro growl. "He's undisciplined and pays no attention to orders." Katra hesitated. "Has his own style, but that doesn't give you the right to be rude." "He's a thief by his own admission," Wufei said, and I could hear the disdain in his voice. Oh, and that's so much better than being a cold-blooded killer. I heard Troa drawl, and I had to grin. The guy was quiet, but that didn't mean his tongue wasn't sharp when he decided to use it. I think I'd heard enough to pretty much get the gist of what was going on. I went into the room, trademark grin plastered on my face, and ignored everyone but Cat. There you are, Cat, I beamed at him. Clean laundry's on the table. You got the car keys? I'm getting ready to make a supply run. He stood and fished the keys out of his pocket, and I detected frowns forming on at least two of the faces in the room. I was doing that anticipate stupidity thing again and could feel myself growing angry. Yep, thinking about buying 60 cartons of ice cream and some cookies. You got any preference in flavors? Wufei's mouth opened, then snapped shut again. Figured he'd be the one to make that assumption. I could see Hiro out of the corner of my eye on the verge of speaking, and so I took a shot. Oh, and who had the "Hi, I'm a Gundam pilot" shirt? Blast, I can't find it. He growled and glared at me. Baka. He gritted, and I grinned. Two for two, I was on a roll. I turned to leave and called airily over my shoulder. I'll try to be back by the end of the week. That should just about cover it. I stopped in the kitchen and took a quick inventory of what we had and what we needed, and took the supply money out of the jar on the windowsill. This was, perhaps, not such a bad idea. It would do me good to get the hell away from here for a little while. I was cursing the luck that had put me in this situation, and started fervently wishing that I'd just get an assignment to get me out of it. I do not usually have a problem getting along with people. I think I'm a pretty easygoing guy. I can normally manage to put people at enough that I can make the connection. Somehow, no matter what I did with this group of guys, I just seemed to irritate them. Now, in all fairness, Troa and Katra didn't seem to mind me all that much. At least they were polite. I seemed to have earned a little respect from Troa, and I think Katra might have actually been halfway to liking my company. It was the other two, the brothers Grimm. It didn't seem to matter what I did, I drove them to distraction. With Wufei, at first it had been almost fun, and I have to admit I spent a little bit of time baiting him, just because it was so easy. But Hiro, that one got to me. There was something about him, something behind those incredible dark blue eyes. Yeah, stop your damn snickering. I fell for that son of a bitch the first time I made eye contact. Get off my back, I'm well aware of what a ridiculous thing that is to do. But where my heart chooses to pin itself is something I've never been able to control. So every one of those bakas cut like a knife. It is approximately 8 miles to town by road. If you walk down the side of the mountain, I imagine, it probably wasn't much more than two. The car is an old beater, an ugly, flat, primer green, but runs okay. I'd spend a little time on it when we'd first gotten here, so at least it didn't burn oil anymore. It looked like the kind of car you would expect any average guy our own age to own. The road down the mountain was a nasty, little switchbacking thing. Winds to hell and back, before coming out in the small town at the bottom. Foxdell, I think it's called. There's a place about 2 miles from the house where you can pull off without being in danger of getting creamed by anything else on the road. Not that anything else had reason to come up this way. I pulled off and parked, got out of the car and sat down on the hood for a bit. Wouldn't do to go down among the civilians as wound up as I was. I just sat and listened to the birds for a few minutes, something I'd never done before coming to Earth, and tried to shove it all down in my mind. This would not last forever. I'd been a lone operative before coming to Earth, and this partnership thing would end eventually, and I would go back to being a lone operative again. Somehow, it didn't make me feel any better. I guess my problem was that in my head, I could visualize what this could be like. We were five of the most unique individuals in the damn solar system. We should have more in common with each other than with anyone else alive. It would have been nice to just be able to talk to one of these guys, to have a true partnership where we watched each other's backs. I snorted softly. Apparently not down this road. Just stop feeling, Maxwell, I muttered to myself and climbed down. This wasn't doing me any good. I was so uptight I was feeling vaguely nauseous. I had to stop letting them getting under my skin. And I had to admit to myself the date wasn't helping matters either. I just didn't want to think about that right now. I got back in the car and finished the drive. Foxdell isn't much to write home about. There's a general store kind of thing. A little bed and breakfast that didn't look like it had seen guests in months. A gas station, a little mom-and-pop restaurant, and maybe a dozen houses. I suspected there was an in-season to this area and we just weren't in it. Too late in the year. The car was a little low on gas, something that goes against my be-ready-for-anything nature, so I pulled into the station first. I had to grin. The pump was so old it didn't even have a digital display. I watched a guy with the name Bill stitched on his pocket come strolling out of the station, and I wondered if these people even knew there was a war going on. "Morning," I called cheerily to Bill. "What can I do you for?" he grinned back. The absolute banal chit-chat was more than welcome relief. "Fill her up," I told him, and popped the hood to check the oil, though I had just done it a couple of days ago. He moved around the car and pulled the hose down, sticking the nozzle in the tank and latching the trigger before coming to look under the hood with me. I noticed that he hadn't had the pump locked. I shook my head. Gotta love small towns. "You got a rag?" I asked him companionably, and he pulled one out of his back pocket and handed it over as he leaned down to look at my engine. "Thanks," I enthused, and proceeded to check my oil, grinning happily when it showed normal. "Damn, I think I finally got that leak fixed." He perked up immediately. "Got oil problems?" "I did," I told him as I put the dipstick back. "Stinking thing was going through almost a quart a week." "No shit," he raised an eyebrow. "No lie," I confirmed, and handed him the rag back. "Took me forever to find it. Had a crack in the manifold." He made a little noise you make when you're being sympathetic. He wiped a hand on his pant leg and stuck it out. "I'm Bill," he informed me. "Hi," I grinned at him and took the offered hand. "I'm Max." God, why couldn't it be this easy with the stoic, anal-retentive Gundam pilots? I put the hood down and we leaned against the car and talked engines for a while. Then he asked me the standard question. What was I doing in these parts? Gonna be around long? The kinds of questions that people just ask in semi-polite conversation. The kinds of questions that make heroes start looking for a place to hide the bodies. So I told him about the camping trip I was on with a couple of my friends, that we'd probably be around for a few days, unless the weather turned bad and we got bored. He told me where to go to do some fishing, and I asked him what was good to eat at the restaurant. By the time I left, he would have asked me back to his house if I'd said I had no place to stay. Why couldn't it be this simple with Hiro and Mufei? When I got to the grocery store, it appeared deserted at first, but I walked in and the little bell over the door rang. A girl's voice called from the back room. "Is that you, Bill?" I had to grin again. Small towns. No, I called back. "Sorry." The voice of a total stranger was enough to bring the young lady out of the back room, wiping her hands on a towel. She was shorter than I was, by a good head, wearing one of those cotton dresses that I think of as granny dresses over a turtleneck, the sleeves of which were rolled up to her elbows. She was probably my age, but seemed like a kid to me. She grinned with pleasure when she saw me, tilting her head to the side, to look me over, and having to sweep her short, cropped brown hair out of her eyes. "Nope," she confirmed for me. "You're not Bill." I grinned back. "Not when I last checked." She grinned, and her nose wrinkled up, and I was put in mind of a puppy. God, she seemed so damn young. "Knew her just passing through," she asked, finishing with the towel and flopping it across her shoulder. "Just a tourist," I told her, and finally turned to find one of those carrying baskets. "Too bad," she said, and I turned to find her smirking openly at me. "Okay, maybe not so young." "I'm Paige." She ignored my moment of stunned reevaluation. "Max," I told her. She regarded me for another moment, then flicked her fingers to take in the store in general. "Go ahead and shop," she told me. "Just holler when you're done. I'll be in the back room." She turned away and left me alone to wander the aisles. I had to shake my head. This was the strangest little place. I had to resist the urge to ask her if she'd ever heard of a thing called a mobile suit. I picked carefully through what was offered on the shelves, trying to imagine each item passing Hiro's inspection. Nothing that would perish quickly. Dry goods, canned goods, with an eye toward food value. I'll never understand why they don't just lay in a supply of military-issue rations and do away with all this crap. I got flour and cornmeal, rice and oatmeal. Some eggs only because I figured out from watching Troa that he used them in a lot of the stuff he cooked. Salt because I had noticed we were almost out. I was cautious of the price, picking over things and comparing volume, doing the math to see where I was getting most for the dollar. That was another one of the Duo Maxwell myths that got on my nerves. Why the hell would you think that someone who'd grown up with it, going without food for days at a time would be frivolous with their money? Give me a break. If there was anybody in our little group who was more likely to overpay for supplies, it was Catra. I'd be willing to bet that until the war he'd never even seen the inside of a grocery store. That's what the people like the Winners had servants for. By the time I had my selections on the counter, I was feeling bitter again, and I had to sigh at my own frame of mind. I should have known I'd be this way today of all days. There was a sharp clang from the back room, and I flinched into a crouch without thinking. "You damn piece of junk," I heard Paige growl, and I rose and walked towards the back room, curiosity piqued. I got there in the veritable nick of time. "Stop," I shouted, and I think I scared the crap out of her. But she froze just a moment before she stuck the wrench she was holding into a very bad place. I strode across the cramped little storage room and jerked the power cord out of the wall. Didn't anybody tell you to unplug major appliances before you dismantled them? I drawled. Her eyes flew wide, and I was a little surprised to see that she understood what she'd almost just done. "Oh my God," she breathed. "I forgot I plugged it back in to test it." She sat back on the floor in a very unladylike pose and blinked up at me. "My God, you just saved my life." I wanted to laugh. The last young lady whose life I'd saved had bitten my head off for my trouble. "What?" I asked, by way of changing the subject. "Were you trying to do?" She stuck out her lower lip and gusted a breath to blow her bangs out of her eyes. "Trying to get this demonic piece of crap running again before we lose $300 worth of frozen food." I turned a critical eye in the direction of the offending piece of equipment. It didn't look that complicated. "Mind if I take a look?" "If you know anything about refrigerating units," she replied, holding out the wrench, "go right ahead." I took hold of the huge chest freezer and pulled it out of the wall before taking the wrench from her. She grinned up at me. "Oh, well, go ahead, cheat." I smirked back and bent to work. "Nothing like a little brute strength," she giggled. "I like brutes." I jerked my head up to look at her and couldn't tell if she was flirting or just teasing or what the hell. I flushed, and I thought she would collapse on the floor laughing her ass off. "Watch yourself," I tried to glower at her. "I could be a wandering axe murderer." Her face ran through a strange series of expressions until I laughed at her and she giggled some more. "Got a flashlight?" I asked, and she got up off the floor to go get one. It took me most of the next half hour, and she sat perched on a box and prattled on while I worked. She had a sharp wit underneath the giggling exterior and actually laughed at some of my jokes. I found that I was kind of enjoying myself, just having a nice, normal conversation without anybody getting my face about something I hadn't done anyways. We found out that we both liked the same kind of music, though she didn't have a clue what a hammer dulcimer was, and I had never heard of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. She was working in her uncle's store until school started again, would be going off to college in another couple of weeks, was going to major in the arts, though her father insisted that she carry a double major so that she would be able to get a real job when she finished school. My Max persona comes with a fairly complete background, and I explained about being on a getaway camping trip with some of my buddies before we had to get back to the grind of school, told her about how we were saving our money for next summer we were going to go to Europe and hike across Great Britain. She asked about my hair, and I told her my rock star joke. I asked about the granny dress, and she told me her laundry joke. Then I plugged in the freezer and fired it up, and was rewarded with the sound of the compressor kicking on. She squealed and practically threw herself off the box and hugged me. "Paige," I said as I untangled her, "it's not that big a deal." She backed off at the first sign of my discomfort, and I decided that she was just one of those people who hugged at the drop of a hat. "Are you kidding?" she yelped. "You just saved the store over $300 in merchandise alone, not only to mention the cost of getting a repairman out here." I grinned down at her. Well, I wasn't doing anything else. Though that made me think about the time, and I realized I'd better get my ass back to the house before the other guys decided I'd been captured and came to kill me to keep me from talking. She seemed to suddenly realize how long it had been herself, and fairly dragged me back out to the front counter to ring me up. I'm so sorry. And then she got a good look at the pile of supplies I had sitting there and quirked an eyebrow at me. Yuck! Is this what you guys are eating? I laughed. Well, none of us is what you call gourmet chefs. That's it. She suddenly beamed and grabbed my arm to haul me back towards the back room again. I need to give you something for going to all that trouble. I had a surreal, damn scary moment before she let go of my arm and stopped to pull open the freezer I'd just repaired. All of this would have been spoiled if you hadn't gotten this running. It takes 2 days to get the repair guy out here. Take whatever you want. She looked up at me expectantly, and I opened my mouth to protest, then shut it again. It wasn't an awful idea. Maybe bringing back something special for tonight's dinner would help smooth things over with the guys. I looked into the compartment, then looked at Paige. You sure? I queried and got an enthusiastic nod. I looked again. I thought about each of the guys and made a couple of careful selections. That's all? She asked, looking surprised, and I had to laugh. Well, I hesitated. I was thinking some fresh vegetables would go good with this. She got them from the supply in the back, the freshest thing in the store. We made our way back out to the front counter, and on the spur of the moment, I snatched a bottle of soda out of the cooler. One teeny little indulgence. Damn it, it had been a long day. She rang things up, and when I told her to ring the soda separate, she just grinned and winked and stuck it in the sack. I sighed and tried to object, but she just waved a hand at me. The way I look at it, I still owe you something like $270. She helped me carry the sacks out to the car, and we exchanged goodbyes over the hood. I headed back towards the safe house, feeling a little better. I thought I'd done okay with the supplies, and I'd managed to score the makings of a really good meal for free. All of it had taken a little of my overly free time, and the exertion of a little mechanical ability. It wasn't even all that late. I'd be back a good couple of hours before Troa started fixing dinner. Maybe the meal would serve to lighten things up a little bit. Maybe I would be able to spend the evening with a little pleasant company. Would be able to immerse myself so much that what day it was would stop nagging at me. I pulled into the yard in a much better mood, singing softly to myself, and I took in the first load of groceries. I made sure to get the perishables first. I saw Hero on the stairs as I came through the front door. He was already glaring at me. I bet myself on the first words out of his mouth, and as if on cue, he said, "What took so long?" "Ran into some old friends and went to a dance club," I drawled and could have kicked myself. This was the vicious cycle he and I lived in. I could almost predict the very few words he would spare me, and that drove me insane. Being able to tell what he would say before he said it made me get defensive, and my smart-ass mouth kicked into high gear, and that apparently drove him insane, and so he just got more sullen. I sighed, good mood pretty well deflated, and went into the kitchen. Katra was there with Troa, and I tried to forget about Hiro. Katra took the sack out of my hands and started to unload it. I turned to head back out for the rest of the supplies. Behind me there was a strange noise, and I found Wufei just coming through the back door. "Maxwell!" he snapped. "You idiot! None of this stuff will keep!" I opened my mouth to defend myself, seeing Hiro come into the kitchen doorway, and suddenly I had four pairs of eyes trained on me. The last vestiges of the good mood faded. What the hell had I been thinking? A decent evening with this group of guys? They all fucking hated me. There was no point even in trying. I didn't speak, just met their eyes, one after another, and turned to walk back out to the car. I grabbed the rest of the sacks and hauled them into the kitchen, dumping them on the table. They were still there, pulling the steaks and vegetables out of the first sack, with vaguely horrified expressions. Wufei was speaking, but I didn't even hear him. I was so angry, I was within inches of full tunnel vision battle mode. My voice, when I opened my mouth, sounded ice cold even to me. "These are the supplies. Here's the receipt, here's the change. Here are the car keys." I laid each item out on the table as I mentioned it. I shoved tonight's dinner into a separate pile, snagging my bottle of soda out of the sack at the last moment. The clerk at the general store gave me this for fixing her freezer. It's for dinner tonight. Enjoy. In my imagination, the temperature suddenly dropped so drastically the windows frosted over. I turned quietly on my heel and strode out of the house. I didn't even slam the door. I hoped they choked on it. You would really, really, really fucking think that the guy who killed people for a living, who called himself a god of death in battle, who had lost every living soul who had ever meant a flying fuck to him, would not be so damn easily hurt. I went out across the yard, glancing up once at the sun to get my bearings before I went into the trees and headed back for town. Screw it. Bill and Paige were a hell of a lot easier to get along with. It was only 2 miles as the crow flies, and the hike might serve to cool my anger. I knew better than to think about taking the only car for personal reasons. I scrambled down the hill in high, hot temper until I slipped and fell and almost near broke my damn leg. I stopped then and found a rock to park myself on, sat with my head in my hands and my goddamn heart on my sleeve, and just hurt. Why in the hell was I letting them get to me like this? Because they were supposed to be my friends, because they were supposed to like me, because I had been stupid enough to get excited when I found out they existed, had thought I had finally found someone who could understand how I felt, how I ached, how tired of it all I was. I had thought that they would be tired and lonely and hurting as much as I was. I had envisioned something, but I had been wrong. They may have been for the best and the brightest, just as advertised, but they made the same stupid assumptions about me that everyone else did. They might be Gundam pilots, with all the implied intelligence and skill that that carried, but they couldn't see through my mask any more than anyone else had. Couldn't look past what I had been to see what I might become. Solo would have laughed at me. "You're feeling sorry for yourself, rat boy," he would have jeered, if he hadn't died. I remembered the bottle of soda stuffed in my jacket pocket and fished it out. Unscrewing the cap, I raised the bottle to salute the sky and murmured, "To the death of feelings," and took a long swallow. That made me laugh at my own melodrama, and I climbed down from my rock with a rueful shake of my head and started back down the mountain. I settled down enough, though, that I could make it without breaking my neck. I got to town about the same time I got to the bottom of the soda and headed towards the gas station, seeing Bill in the bay with a car on the rack. I tossed the empty bottle in the nearest trash can and waved at him when he looked up at the noise. "Hey, Max," he hollered and came out to greet me, wiping his hands on the rag. "What you working on?" I asked, and let him lead the way back into the garage. I had every intention of killing the rest of the day in town, and it might as well be doing this as wandering around aimlessly, begging total strangers to talk to me. At least Bill and I had been formally introduced. Turned out he was trying to get his engine hauled out of the Chevy he had pulled into the bay and was delighted when I offered to help. It's a job that's much easier with two people. So we passed the next couple of hours wrestling with his car and hollering back and forth at each other over the rock music he was blaring on the radio. I had to grin at the ridiculousness of it all. Before long, my arms and hands were covered with half a dozen cuts and skinned knuckles. I had grease all over the place and was still having a better time than I'd had all bloody week up at the safe house. Though Bill would probably not ever pass the advanced algebra or become a rocket scientist, he was an okay guy. We passed the time talking about music and sports, school and cars, general guy things. It was pleasant. When we finally had the engine block hanging from the hoist in the middle of the garage bay, he slapped my back and we had to laugh at the greasy mess we'd both become. "If you want," he told me apologetically, "there's an old shower stall out back. The former owner used to live above the apartment in the garage, and his wife wouldn't let him come in the house until he was clean." I had to grin. "Oh God, real life hot water?" He laughed. "That's right, you're roughing it, aren't you?" I flushed a little, realizing that I must look like he'd just offered me the Holy Grail, and I ducked my head. "Yeah, camping in the great outdoors and bathing in the damn creek." He snickered at me. "Don't you just hate cold showers?" "Worse than anything this side of frontal lobotomy," I groused, and he showed me out back without further ado. It was nothing more than a 4-foot square, cinder block stall open to the evening air, but it looked like heaven. Bill pointed out a battered bottle of shampoo and a stack of clean towels. Don't worry about the hot water. The thing's attached to a tank the size of Detroit. He went back inside and I turned on the water and quickly stripped and stepped under the spray. God, this was bliss. I worked the temperature up until steam was billowing around me and my skin was turning a faint pink. For a few minutes, I just stood and let the water run over me, closing my eyes and grinning like a damn loon into the fading evening light. With a regretful sigh, I opened my eyes and got to work getting clean. I unbraided my hair and quickly washed it, then scrubbed the grease and sweat off with a bar of harsh soap I found in the soap dish. Lady Opportunity doesn't knock very often, so I took a teeny bit of advantage and allowed myself an extra 5 minutes. It was getting dark by that time, and standing outside, bare-ass naked, even if it was in the confines of a 5-foot-high wall, was giving me a nagging feeling of being watched. I dried and dressed quickly, and went back inside to find Bill leafing through the Hot Rod magazine and waiting for me. He tossed me the book while he went and took his turn. He returned not much quicker than I had, but with the added advantage of clean clothes. Now that it was getting dark, I found that the feeling of standing in the well-lit bay with the overhead doors standing wide open left me with that itchy, I'm exposed feeling, and I asked him if the general store was still open. He glanced down at his watch and frowned. Paige should be here by now. She closed at 6. He observed, and a familiar giggle came to us from outside. I've been here for 10 minutes. Paige laughed and came wandering into the garage. Then what the hell were you doing? Bill asked her with a confused grin. Taking full advantage of watching 2 cute guys showering, she replied blandly, and I wasn't sure which of us were going to choke to death first. Paige, my fellow mechanic yelped, his face turning a dark purple. Knock it off. I was at a total loss as to what kind of relationship these two had, but I decided that Paige's flirting must have been pretty harmless for her to engage in it with both of us at the same time. Besides, she couldn't possibly have seen anything from where she had been standing. Listen, I asked her, as much to change the course of the conversation as anything. Would you mind letting me back in the store for a minute so I can get something to eat? Her expression went all serious and she frowned at me. What happened to the big dinner you had planned? I ducked my head. I'd hoped she'd forgotten about that. The guys took off and went fishing. Without you? She was instantly indignant on my behalf. Oh, it's all right, I assured her quickly. I don't fish. It was in the plan. I just forgot that it was tonight. Her face got all sympathetic. That sucks, she blurted. They shouldn't have planned anything that the whole group didn't like to do. I had to laugh at her. She was going to make someone a killer, overprotective mommy someday. It's really all right. I just completely lost track of the date. That ironic lie almost made me flinch. Her face cleared and she grabbed an arm of each of us. Well then, since you don't have any plans, you can come with us to dinner. We're just going on our way over to Johnson's. I balked. Paige. I flushed quickly doing the calculations on the teeny amount of personal money I had on me. I can't afford... She snorted at me. Don't be ridiculous. I still owe you... Let's see. 200 and... Bill interjected a question at that point about the $270, which led Paige to relate the whole he saved my life story, and before I quite knew what was happening, I was sitting between them at a table in the diner eating pizza. Listening to them banter back and forth, I eventually figured out that they were more like brother and sister than boyfriend and girlfriend. They had grown up in this little town together, the only 2 kids in their age group, and had been kind of forced to learn to get along. I drank in their stories of childhood growing up with families. Paige had an older brother who was going to graduate college this next year. Bill had a younger sister who was still in grade school. I enjoyed their company and we laughed together, sharing the pizza and talking until Mr. Johnson informed us that it was time to close. We left the diner and Bill told us goodbye, thanking me for my help with the car and heading back to the garage to lock up and head home. My path, apparently, coincided with Paige's, because she walked with me toward the edge of town. Thanks for dinner, I told her, then grinned. Twice. She frowned. Too bad you didn't enjoy the first one. I snorted. Max? She glanced up at me, and I had a sudden chill feeling in the pit of my stomach. Yeah? I asked, and knew I really didn't want to hear this question. She stopped in the middle of the street and turned to face me with her hands planted on her hips. Well, that sounded enthusiastic. I chuckled. Sorry. Do you like me? She blurted. What? I yelped, caught by surprise with her suddenness more than the question. It had kind of been what I was afraid it would be. She cocked her head off to the side and looked at me again. You aren't going to be here long, she informed me. I don't have time to beat around the bush. Do you like me or not? I threw back my head and laughed and could only answer her with the same bluntness. Sweetie, if you were a guy, I'd be all over you in a heartbeat. I waited for the uproar, waited for the shocked gasp, but all I got was a defeated sigh. God damn, cute ones are always gay, she growled under her breath. Then we both chuckled together. I'm sorry, I told her sincerely. I do like you. I think you're funny and nice and honest, but just not like that. She quirked a grin up at me. Nope, not like that, I confirmed. She did that thing where she blew her bangs out of her eyes. Well, shit. We resumed walking and parted ways not long after. I made the curve in the road before I waded into the bushes and started the climb back up the mountain. There was a moon, thank God, or I probably would have had to stick with the road and walk the whole damn 8 miles. As it wasn't going to be fun. I made my way, careful, automatically quiet, and I almost wished I could turn around and go back down to town. Every step I took back towards that safe house was adding a burden to my shoulders until I felt like I should be more bowed under the weight of it. I listened to the quiet sounds of the woods and felt bitter depression seeping back to fill me. About halfway up the mountain, I decided that as soon as this assignment was over, I was going to refuse to work with any of my partners again. Shinigami didn't need any damn help. I'd worked on my own all this time. I would be better off working alone again. I stopped when I came near the place in the creek where I had bathed that morning and sat on the rock where I'd eaten breakfast. There was another thing I needed to deal with before going into the house. Finally deciding to stop ignoring me, the breath of a sigh of wind brought the words of my ghost to me across the years. Yeah, Solo. Should have known you wouldn't leave me alone on tonight of all nights. I sighed. If I had closed my eyes, I could almost see him in front of me, standing with that ball of blonde hair blowing around his face, that ever-present blue headband holding it out of his eyes. Guy needs a little respect on the day he died, he grinned at me. Sorry, I murmured, and resisted the urge to reach out. I knew he wasn't really there. He grunted and smirked at me. Took you damn long enough to come talk to me. Had a little trouble this year, I told him and turned my face toward the moon. You okay, rat boy? In my head, he turned to look at the moon with me. I'll be all right, I sighed and grinned despite myself. Thanks for giving it enough of a shit to ask. He just cocked his head. So? I inquired softly. How long do we have? He didn't answer me for a minute, and I knew he was, well, would have been wrestling with telling me. Can't we just talk? He asked at length. Since I'm really just talking to myself? No, that seems kind of nuts. He snorted then. No damn respect. I don't know, maybe 5 minutes? You'd think you could pin down the time of your own death a little closer than that, I smirked. Take it or leave it, rat boy, he growled, and I had to remind myself to keep my eyes closed so as to not lose sight of him. I reached down and pulled my pants leg up and sheathed my hunting knife. I really miss you, King Rat, I murmured. His eyes would have followed the knife as I laid it in my lap and rolled my sleeve up. He growled softly. I really hate this part, he told me. Can't we just skip this, kid? Nope, I told him. It's been another year. It wasn't your damn fault, he said, moved to turn away. You saved the others. Nothing you could do for me. I took hold of the heavy blade like it was a pencil and brought it to the back of my arm. I let you die, Solo. And now you gotta make that damn mark. Another year, another scar. His voice was tight. I won't forget. I promised him again, as I had every year since the night he died. I slid the blade across my skin and made the cut. Nothing much, nothing spectacular. Just enough so that it would leave a fine, white scar. There were 9 of them now, all in a row running down my forearm. I kept my back to him until I could close my eyes again. "It's done," I sighed. "You can turn around now." "You didn't forget," he told me, and his voice was getting fainter already. "You know," I said on a sudden inspiration, "Duo is really 9 years old. He wasn't born until you died." "Guess that makes it your birthday," he smirked at me just before he faded. It was my turn to snort. I opened my eyes to an empty clearing. "God, I missed you, old friend," I murmured to the empty air, and couldn't stop my hand from reaching out to the place where he hadn't ever been. I closed my eyes for a second, hoping he would come back and touch my hand. I so needed someone to touch me. But he didn't. He never did. "See you next year." I wiped my blade clean and put it away, and just sat for a minute more, blinking up at the moon. It was brighter than I'd thought, because it was making my eyes water. Then there was the sudden feeling of being watched. I froze, every one of my senses suddenly awake. That place between my shoulder blades was screaming for me to run, but there was something about the presence that seemed familiar, and I finally caught the scent on the breeze. "Come out, hero," I growled and didn't bother turning toward him. I wasn't 100% sure where he was. It took him a moment to decide. Maybe he thought I was just fishing, but wasn't really sure he was there. But finally he stirred. I still didn't hear him, but caught a movement out of the corner of my eye. I did turn toward him then. "What do you want?" I asked and felt the ice coming into my voice. I just wished I could let that ice fill my heart. He didn't speak immediately, but came a little closer, stopping in front of me. "What are you doing out here?" he asked, and his voice was strange. "We're not currently on a mission. What I do in my spare time is pretty much my own damn business." I fervently wished I knew how long he had been watching me and just what all he had seen. I felt off balance, and every defense I owned was in full holy shit mode. He chewed on that, which further threw me. I had been expecting an instantaneous verbal attack. "What do you want?" I asked again when he didn't immediately speak. He hesitated. For a teeny split second, I saw a touch of confusion in his eyes. But suddenly I knew what he was doing here. "You followed me because you didn't trust me not to compromise the mission," I said flatly, and could tell when he flinched that I'd hit it right on the head. He still seemed to be struggling not to let this turn into a yelling match. "We're agitated in the state when you left the house." I laughed out loud. "Agitated?" I repeated, and had to look away from the sullen expression on his face. "Agitated," I said again and chuckled a little more. "I am not sure that you're in any condition," he began, and I rose angrily from my rock, suddenly awash with bitter emotion. "You caught me on a bad day, Mr. Perfect Fucking Everything Yui," I snarled. I knew he'd finally pushed me too damn far. I tried to put a lid on my mouth, but it was a little too late for that. "It's the anniversary of the death of the only friend I ever had. I spend a little time alone with his ghost every year at this time. I don't remember inviting you to the reunion. I have done nothing, fucking nothing, to compromise you or any of the others. I am sick to death of you hounding my every move, questioning my every decision. I have given you no reason to doubt my abilities, and I want to know what your goddamn problem with me is." I was panting. I was in his face. I was really sorry, and pretty sure I was about to die. He just stood for a moment and stared at me. I figured he was going to deck me any minute. I stood my ground, not because I thought I had a chance against him, but because I don't back down from much of anything once I've committed myself. "I apologize," he said softly, and I'm fairly certain my jaw popped when my mouth fell open. I tried to say something, but nothing came out. He took advantage of the opening. "We discussed the incident over the supplies, and you're right. We didn't give you a chance to explain before we jumped to conclusions." I was the one who'd ended up breaking eye contact first. Well, I said intelligently. I accepted. I finally managed to choke out. There might have been a small sound of amusement from him, but I wouldn't swear to it. My world was off its damn axis again. Hiro Yui apologizing to me? I wanted to ask him to repeat it just to be sure. This must be his unevil twin. Next he'd be asking me if I was all right. We waited to eat supper, he said, very quietly, and I think I choked. I whirled around and looked at him, and had to bite down on the urge to accuse him of being an imposter. What? I said stupidly. The irritation came back to his face a little bit as he said, It didn't seem right to eat what you had provided for us. He ground out, and I finally had to accept the fact that this really was Hiro. I suppose we should head back to the house then, I said very quietly. We turned and walked back up the path side by side, and I decided that I would not speak again, just so as not to break the spell. It was a hell of a long way from Bosom Buddies, but it was a damn sight better than what I'd had this morning. All I could do was hope that the spell held. This has been Assumptions, the first part of the Ion Arc, written by Sunhawk, read by Rhea314. Thank you for listening.